Good day, and welcome to our podcast for the Dubuque Chorale. My name is Stan Cheshire, and I am the associate conductor for the chorale. Sadly, the Dubuque Chorale is on hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. We have been unable to perform nor rehearse together since March of 2020. This project is our outreach to you, our singers, our patrons, and friends and family of the choral arts in Dubuque. Like many people across the world affected by the pandemic, we too have learned new skills, such as baking bread, individual sports like disc golf. I want to thank Dr. Rob Stoll for introducing that to me. And as some of my colleagues know in education, we've learned new computer skills with online meetings, virtual ensembles, or in this case, creating a podcast. In this podcast, I had conversations with two of our singers in the chorale, Mary Beth Faring and Marty Fiesler. They will share with us some memories about joining the chorale, songs they've sung, and friends they've made along the way. Then we'll listen to a couple of those recordings from the chorale from our 40-year history. Thank you for joining us.
I joined the choir back, as best I can remember, in 1979. I've been married 2 years and had been starting my elementary teaching career and decided I needed to be involved in music in a more adult way because I missed that from my choir years. And so saw an advertising in the newspaper for the Dubuque Chorale and joined up in the fall of their season of 79. And I've been with them ever since. Was a smaller group in the beginning. We met and sang just at Westminster Church on risers, and then we've grown and different. But I needed to sing. I needed to keep that part of my musical life going. And I've made wonderful friends, some of which are still in the chorale, at people I started singing with 40 years ago, and lots of new friends and new people over the years. Variety of songs. I've traveled with the chorale to some places I went to the Australia trip, would have never gotten to Australia without the Dubuque Chorale.
That's cool.
That was cool. That was a great trip. Went to Canada and I went to England, were the three trips of the years. I was fortunate in college to travel with Clark to Europe and some of those great venues. So some of the other trips that the chorale took, our kids were younger, and so I didn't take those because I'd been to Italy. Not that you can't go more than once, but opted out to not some of those because I'd been there through choir in college years, but really enjoyed. But when the opportunity to go to Australia came around, it was like, yeah, this one you can't pass. That's a once in a lifetime. And to say I sang in the Sydney Opera House.
Wow, that's really cool.
We did.
Do you remember any of those pieces? Like,
at the Sydney Opera House, we sang with Eric Whitaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a mass choir type event.
Okay.
That people from around the globe.
So when was that? Because Eric Whitaker, I mean, he's been around a while, but he hasn't been around that long.
Yeah, that was one of the last things. I did not look that date back up before I came, before we started talking. 15 years ago. Because that was still Dennis,
sure,
Williams' time.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it's got to be about that point.
How many directors has the chorale had? We've had
three.
Just three.
Dennis Williams, our founder, and was there, I think, I'm not sure exactly when, 20 years or more. And then we've had Bob Demery for those years. And then now with Amanda.
Sure. What sort of stylistic things do you remember from Dennis versus, you know, or at least choosing repertoire versus how they directed or any of that sort of stuff?
Right. Dennis, particularly in the beginning, it was the big masterworks. And even Dennis recently retired and he gifted lots of his scores and lots of things to us to keep versus him holding on. And it's mostly classical masterworks and those small oratorios and things like that that we sang with him.
Right.
And then it was a spring concert, a fall concert. That was it, two things. And then we kind of grew and added in. And then the symphony, we started joining them for Christmas things. And even then, it was still more classical type things. And I'm trying coming up like the 12 Days of Christmas, things that were small mini works.
Sure.
Versus just an octavo or a carol kind of thing with okay. that. And that's grown and developed as well. And then we've added on our summer concerts in the park. That I'm trying to remember if William started those, because I think Bob inherited that. And we kind of were just taking things from our spring concert, trying to go out and add another chance to sing. And
another chance to be out in the community and such.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Joyce Johnson is one of our altos, still sings, and her husband was involved many years ago. And if we were doing anything socially, Del was just a fun guy. And some of the trips and things, we'd even on the bus, and so he'd sneak in a couple of beers. He'd carry him out like in his sock and have him. And he knew he could always reach across the aisle on the bus and hand me one. I was kind of a drinking buddy from time to time when we were, some fun things that we would do when we were out and about. Because with that, and then again, just even socially amongst the group, they were a great group. Genevieve Gorley's one of our sopranos. She's a charter member, and so I've been singing with Genevieve for 40-some years.
Oh, my.
Yeah, in our section. Great, friend and colleague as a music teacher as well. That's been a long term. And there's several other faces. Mark Opadal and I have been, he's been together. The Australia trip, my sister-in-law ended up backing out. She was going to be my roommate. So we ended up with, as numbers go, with an odd number of people.
Sure.
So somehow they arranged it that I was Mark Opadal's, his brother's roommate on paper.
Okay.
It was the extra room that they got somehow, the directors and all of that sort of thing. So we always joked about being roommates, although then in essence, when we got to the hotels, I had a room by myself. Because he roomed with his brother, but that's how it had to look on paper.
Oh, sure.
Is that we were roommates.
Okay.
Open all and fairing. Open all. I'm going, yeah, I'll take the key. So that was a fun trip and fun memories there. Just people that, and then the younger ones come in and you guide them along and you try to, and we've gotten young people then that have been involved, brought a student teacher that I had into the group and she sang with us for 2 or 3 years. Then after that, she's now up in Platteville with her own family and
terrific.
Can't, have the commitment time to be back, but there's some fun things like that and just people over the years. And then you run into them on the street, ran into in the pharmacy just last week, ran into somebody who used to sing with us and. You just always remember, it's a lifelong friendship. You look at them and, sure. It's always, hi, how are you? And you remember who they were. And
How many people do you think you have recruited for the group?
Not all that many, maybe 20 or so over the years. You don't know sometimes whether you, said something to somebody and recruited them, but somebody that you know that all of a sudden is in and.
You pop back behind their shoulder. It's like, be sure to write me down as a reference.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work.
Nah, not necessary for anything.
Sure. Of the concerts. So you're talking about the bus trip. That was in Australia?
Yeah.
That happened. Do you remember what some of the songs that you did on that trip?
Other than, is it Sleep that we've done?
Sleep. Because
I've got my own copy of that from that concert.
Yeah, Sleep is one of his hits.
Yeah. And it was funny. I mean, and that's even been 15 or so years ago. And Genevieve Gorley that I mentioned a minute ago, she and I were on that trip and middle-aged probably at that point or 40-ish, whatever we were. And there were some younger, more college type people that were sitting in front of us.
Sure.
And as the voices change, as you get older, those gals thought our voices were not, as well-trained or not the sound that they were singing mm-hmm. with. And so they kind of always kept turning and giving us the eye and thinking our voice, kind of thinking there was too much vibrato and not the type of singing that should be with the group. And I'm
sure.
now that I'm truly am a more of a senior vintage, I get that. But at that time, Genevieve and I were sort of like, yeah, honey, you're going to get older too, and you'll realize that you don't have that voice forever, so enjoy it. One of my obviously proud moments of being in the Dubuque Chorale was in March of 1988 when I was selected to be the soprano soloist for the chorale when we were doing the Poulenc Gloria with the symphony orchestra in their spring concert. So that was, they were tryouts, and I was extremely excited when Nicholas Palmer, who was the director of the symphony at the time, decided to choose me, much younger me than it is now, but so worked on those pieces and sang them. I'm remembering that second concert, and he was directing, and he lost his baton. And from the distance, his wife had caught it. She came down the aisle. It's a movement I wasn't singing. I was sitting. I watched her come down the aisle. She picked up the baton, and somehow he had known, peripherally, he must have seen her coming. He reached behind him. She gave him the baton. He picked back and, you know, had been directing with just hands, and then he was back with his baton again. It's like, cool. You know, that's part of it. But yeah, it was exciting. We were, back then, the locals were singing solos with the symphony. They weren't as they are now when they're bringing in some of the guest artists from, or that have local connections, but now that are out there big time, it was exciting. And the symphony, our chorale members felt it was really neat to have one of us be the guest soloist. The only other thing, we sang Andrew Lloyd Webber's Requiem. We did the Iowa premiere of that piece, the chorale did. And I was the soprano soloist when we did that piece as well. So my early years, still do a few little solos every now and then. But that was part of with the classical music, you always had those works that had the solo sections.
So one of the songs that you remember?
Oh, Whistle and I'll Come to Ye. It was part of our British Isles concert with Bob Demery back a few years ago. It was just a fun piece to do. I love singing songs from other countries. You get a feel for their life, particularly folk songs, of what their history and things like that of the people. And it was fun. There was a flute with it, which is always nice to have some extra instruments and some simple things like that in it as well. And just the words and diction when you've got some high tessitura to sing. It was just a fun piece to work on, different than anything we'd been doing, I think.
Sure. Do you remember who played flute or any of that?
I think that was Peg Cornelius. She's Peg Luke now. They've moved out of town, but she's involved with quite a lot of things.
With the COVID shutdown and the lack of being able to meet, what's some of the things you miss right now with our shutdown?
Oh, I miss the people. I miss the camaraderie, because the chorale is more than just walk in, sit down, sing. We have relationships with people, and we care about the people in our group. When someone's sick, when someone has a baby, if someone's, you know, we have some that are, you know, their parents have sang with the chorale as well. And so if someone dies in their family, you know, we want to honor that, because the majority of us are friends. And it isn't just that group. It's anyone. You could have been with us 6 months and we care as much about you and what's happening in your life, if something good and bad. So the friendship and the camaraderie, I miss as much as I miss the singing. Obviously, I miss the singing and all of that work. And I know my voice is suffering from not singing on a regular basis, of that quality of singing in the shower and singing it, you know, out and about a little bit is not the work. And I'm not taking the time to work at my voice, because chorale did that for me. And so I'm not keeping it trained. And I can tell when I do try to sing a little bit more purposefully that it's lost something, you know, the breath control and the support. When we come back, it's going to need to take some time to work and build back up again.
Thanks a lot, Mary Beth.
It's been great. It's been great. Happy, you know, we're trying. The memories are great to bring back up and think about those 40 years and what all the things, all the music and titles and pieces that I've sung and amount of music. It's monumental, but it's been fabulous.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks. Thank you.
History of me in Dubuque. Dubuque is a financial decision. IBM, who's was my employer, was closing down shops in across North America, and the job that I had was being let go, but they were opening a site in Dubuque and they needed experienced managers to get the shop running and interview people and get people going and get processes procedures started. And I volunteered to do that, so I was moved out here to set up shop and get that going. For the corral, I was surprised by the fact that Dubuque had a corral. Moved here in 2010, never saw anything, never saw any advertisements, things like that. And I was friends of Harriet Heitzman, and I think a lot of the corral members are going to recognize that name. She was a neighbor. And we were at one of her parties, and she introduced me to her son, Wes, and she knew that I was interested in music, and he found out that I was, and snagged me a little later and said, there's a concert you need to go to at St. Raphael's. It's the Isles concert. And I said, fine, I'll go check it out, see what's going on. And there was a multimedia presentation. They had the corral, and they had the music, and they had the screens up with pictures and everything. And it was an impressive concert. That was part of it. And I saw, the chorale, and I saw Cadenza. And between those two, it really sparked my interest, because living in Chicago for 30 years, I was part of the Apollo Chorus. I was part of the Windy City Gay Chorus and part of Windy City Slickers. And I really was looking for something that was community, that had some good singers in it, and then had a small group that did itty-bitty little cocktail parties and events, those kind of small things as commercials for the group, and that fit the bill, and it sounded really good. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to the rehearsal. So I linked up with Wes and said, I want to go to a couple rehearsals here, see what's going on. And now I've been in the chorus since 2013, sung with Cadenza on and off as my schedule permits, and I'm on the board of directors, and I'm the treasurer. So I've come quite a bit, and I still enjoy it. Oh, friendships and fellowships. One is Mark Obadal. He kind of snagged me and helped me in Cadenza, and is just an all-around good guy. I've known him since Corral started. Another good influencer really was the previous director, Bob Demery. And the thing that really stands out for me in that, out of all of the concerts, because he was the only director I actually sang for with the chorale until Amanda arrived. He did an all-day retreat on the Beethoven Mass we were going to be singing, and it was one of the best master classes I have ever attended. Because he was explaining the entire structure, he was explaining the history behind it, he was explaining to people, this is what you need to listen for, this is why it was written this way, and just an unbelievable amount of information. And that was impressive. That was really impressive. The other thing with the chorale in general is that everybody's willing to just kind of do what's needed to get done. And the examples of that is that constant having to set up and remove chairs, for rehearsals. You get there and all of a sudden there's like 10 or 15 people that are always there to help set up. And then at the end of it, all of a sudden there's a flurry of activity with a dozen or so people that are stacking chairs and getting them where they belong and putting it all away. And that really helps. It really shows that everybody cares about it. And if they're able, they do what needs to happen in order to have rehearsals go smoothly and keep everybody, kind of on top. Doing my undergrad degree in music and getting my master's, we got that kind of training. So, if you're at the opera and you hear this, da 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 dee dum, the Carmen's on there somewhere. You can just tell. And I learned that, and how Wagner used all of these themes, you could really tell what was happening without necessarily being able to see it. You just knew musically what was going on. And I think that really helped the chorale sing that. So they understood, you know, oh, I do have the melody, and I'm singing this because I'm responding to what just happened. And I heard this in the second movement. Oh, this is what he's talking about. It's here and now it's back here. And oh, this is inverted. And just all of that information musically that he gave, I think really helped the chorale, you know, understand the piece and sing it really as well as they did. Kind of sad one, but it was beautifully done. And, you know, to me, it was really the chorale was just, it was exquisite the way we did that. And it was Flanders Field for our Verses of Allah concert. It was, you know, she explained it. She worked with the group, but the production that was done by the chorale that night was just exquisite. They understood what it was. And we sang it delicately, and we sang our pianos piano, and we sang our mezzo fortes mezzo forte, and it just, you know, it was just wonderful. That was, you know, by far what I think is one of the most beautiful pieces we've done. Another one that I thought was just fantastic, and I'm just astounded by the time it was over with, because it was one of those, if you didn't get up and applaud at the end of the concert, you just didn't understand. And that was the Bluegrass Mass. That thing was just wonderful, and I'd never heard it before. And my favorite piece in that was the Gloria, you know. And I know, had I been in an audience in that, and I had gone to that concert and they sang that, I would have been screaming at the end of the Gloria, because it just added so much energy, and it was just driving. And I thought, oh, that was really good. And then my happiest moment, my most funny moment, and this is dedicated to Amanda. And that's learning to sing Happy Birthday using the enigmatic scale that the baritone section did so wonderfully at every possible opportunity. Well, and the interesting part is that's the first time I'd ever heard that piece before. And when you hear a recording of it, you don't even hear the scale. It's this beautifully lush, you know, warm fudge, hot marshmallow song. But when you're rehearsing your parts, you're like, what? You know, how did he work that? So with all of this stuff going on with this animated skill, that it sounds so wonderful. And it's really quite good. And I hope we do get a chance to do that. Well, it's jovial. And the other thing, you know, was... I was pretty much born and raised out of, you know, going to Wheeling, West Virginia and the WWVA Jamboree. So, you know, hearing these banjos and guitars and fiddles, you know, instead of violins, I'm used to that kind of sound. You know, I'm not surprised by it. But when you hear something with that's religious in nature and it's like, glory be to God on high, you're like, and all of a sudden a violin comes in and there's banjos, you're like, what? And it really kind of took me aback the first time around, going, I can't believe they were able to marry these two, you know, this musical style with the content, and it works, and it really worked. So it was quite surprising.
Tough parts that you had to sing over in rehearsal that you remember?
No, I always thought we were overpowering Monroe Crossing, but we weren't, you know, in the recordings. But you really didn't, you couldn't really appreciate the actual piece itself until we had Monroe Crossing there at our rehearsals. Because it just, with the piano accompaniment, there's one thing, but the piano can't do fiddle and banjo and all of that other sounds that are coming that, you know, the composer wrote it for. So it was really a pleasant shock when Monroe Crossing came in, because then all of a sudden this music was just wonderful, and you could hear it. You know, you could kind of hear what she had in mind when she was writing stuff. And then the glory was part of that, where it was just happy. You know, the rhythm was happy and the notes were happy, and it just kind of made you toe tap. That was, I think, you know, everybody would have been toe tapping for that song. That ending is just, it builds beautifully. There's that modulation just before, and then it starts nice and quiet, and things just build and build, and then it just stops. And it's one of those where, you know, I was expecting a stinger at the end of it. You'd have this da-dum, dum, and it does, and it goes da-da, and then it's over. And it's one of those where you're like, ooh, you know, it takes you a few seconds to realize it's done. But just that whole build-up at the end is, you know, that was beautifully done, I think. Don't envy Amanda at all. I'm sure this is not what she was expecting when she accepted the position of the director of the chorale. But you know, she's done quite a bit. She has a different style, and I think the entire group has gone along with it. They're like, you know, it's a fresh experience. We have some of the new set of eyes, a new set of ears, and another idea of what she thinks the chorale can do. And so far, I've had a really good time. She's very easygoing. We'll listen, you know, to what people have to say. And, you know, I wish her luck. You know, hopefully we can sing in the next 6 or 8 months. But, you know, she's doing the best, you know, to, you know, keep the planning going, saying, you know, when the time comes, I'm ready. You know, I've got my concert ideas. I've got my music ideas. You know that, so she's ready. You know, so you know, I just wish we wouldn't have had to, you know, get in here with fire and brimstone. But I think she's doing good, and I do appreciate her. You know, I just miss singing, and I'm not really a shower singer. I may sing if the stereo is loud enough. But I really miss using my voice that way. And I also miss just having the concerts and everything that goes around that, you know, getting the music ready and getting your clothes ready and getting the stage ready and getting everybody lined up in reverse order and all of that, so we get there, and making sure there's enough chairs up front. It's the whole experience that you just don't get. And you know, I kind of miss all of that, and I miss the energy, and I miss the, you know, the cadence of the intimacy of that group, and how they're, you know, how they learn to listen to each other, to the point where you may not need a conductor for some, because we're all on the same page and we're all breathing together, so we're kind of just this unit, you know, that sings. So I just miss all of that interplay, and I miss the desserts and stuff that the sopranos always provided. And sometimes altos.
Oh,
I am relatively new to the chorale. We've only performed one season together, so sadly I don't have as much a storied history as Mary Beth and Marty do. However, I mean, we could talk about my interview process, but I was nervous and I don't remember much. What I will talk about a bit is one of my favorite pieces that we've done, Sean Kirshner's Unclouded Day. I really enjoy this piece. It's the third of a set called Heavenly Home, Three American Songs. Some of my favorite songs come from the Sacred Harp singing tradition, where people gather and sing in what's called a hollow square. Altos are facing tenors, basses are facing sopranos, and one person stands in the middle to give a, starting note and to direct a steady beat. There really isn't necessarily beautiful singing, just singing. Sometimes it is just loud and boisterous and amazing when everybody is just singing so loud. Thankfully, we do it in a little more of a beautiful way, but it's really an amazing sensory experience when you're in a Sacred Harp singing session, as it were. Kirshner's Unclouded Day has some of that singing heritage in the song, and he weaves it really wonderfully with counterpoint and a fugue that we've heard from masters like Bach and Beethoven. The voices are just cascading over each other that ultimately it rises in this huge city made of gold. Oh, and to hear that on the Five Flag stage was just so much fun. What I remember most about that song is how much I had listened and sung that piece at the time the chorale was rehearsing it. Unclouded Day was one of the all-state pieces for Iowa high schools, and I had performed it with another Dubuque ensemble just a few short months before. So adults and high school students and everybody was just singing it around at the time. As a tenor, I love singing the highs and feeling the lows that filled the room. I remember first hearing the song in Minneapolis at the National Choral Directors Convention. I also had an opportunity to sit and talk with Sean Kirshner. The University of Iowa, where I was working for my master's at the time, had a dinner reception with alumni and friends and family of the music department and the university. And Sean and I sat at a table together, picked his brain, and we talked a lot about his choices for songs and things like that. And it was really a fantastic experience. I want to thank Mary Beth Faring and Marty Fiesler for taking the time to have our conversations together, and the Dubuque Chorale Board for this opportunity. I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining us. I hope you have a good year. Wear a mask, stay safe, and we'll be singing together again very soon. This is Sean Kirshner's Unclouded Day.